You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 164.
Our latest entry in the random facts category for numbers of episodes is this. Did you know that on a Scrabble board, 15 by 15, 225 squares, there are 61 squares that have special modifiers, like double word score, you know, double letter score, whatever. Okay. And there are 164 that have nothing.
Okay, then.
Hello, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we have another kind of fun show for you this week. We are going to talk about games that we think are good games to give as gifts. So every year we have a holiday gift-giving guide, and that'll be coming out probably right around the beginning of November, which is in a couple of weeks.
Beginning, middle, you know, sometime.
Something like that. Yeah, if we don't miss too many of our own deadlines. But before we release that, we thought maybe we'd kind of give you a little bit of a primer.
A little preview, or maybe you have occasions to buy gifts for before Christmas comes around.
Right. You never really know. I mean, I hear that September is the most popular month for birthdays, so I guess we missed that. But there's still lots of opportunities to buy gifts in the general holiday season, which may not be Christmas or Hanukkah. So we just figured we'd kind of... We're getting our brains in gear for this, and so we thought we'd give a little bit of a preview for you as well.
So we broke down a top five, and within this top five, you will find at least one recommendation for anybody on your list.
That's what we think, anyway. So we've also got some back talk this week. We got some great back talk about episode 162 that we'd love to share with you. Mm-hmm. But as always, my dear, I think we should start the show with what we've been playing.
I think you're right.
All right. What have you been playing?
Well, back at Origins, I got a very quick preview of some games that are called Brainwaves from Cosmos.
Yeah.
We got those in the mail fairly recently, and we started opening them up and trying them out. We tried two so far, The Astute Goose and The Wise Whale. We'll have reviews coming relatively soon for those, but let me just state that these are games designed to improve your memory and still be fun, and both of those things are true.
Awesome. I have had the chance to play Astute Goose a few times with you and the kids and stuff like that. That is a game where you have a set of numbers, and depending on what number gets rolled on a die, you have to try to remember some aspect of the card that number is like attached to.
Yeah, you roll two dice. One gives you the number of the card you need to remember, and the other one gives you the aspect, whether that's the color of the shirt the person is wearing, or you have to say what accessory they have around their neck, or what pet they're holding.
So that's pretty cool. I really like the way they moderate the difficulty level with that game. I think that's pretty clever.
Yeah. You can have as many as six different cards, or as few as three.
Right. Instead of having 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then a card under each one, you basically have... The 1 and the 4 can describe the same card, the 2, and then so on and so forth. And you can tier those or set it up however you want to support 3, 4, 5, or 6 cards. And I like that. I think it's a really nice way to moderate that. So that you can get the difficulty just right.
Yeah.
Yeah, get people who maybe are less experienced with that playing that game. But talk about the other one, The Wise Whale.
Mm-hmm. So The Wise Whale is a memory game where all of the cards are sea creatures. And there are a total of 7 different sea creatures and 7 different colors. So there is one card of each combination of a sea creature and a color. Just like with The Astute Goose, you can moderate the difficulty by pulling out a certain number of colors and a certain number of creatures. But the basic idea behind the game is that you lay out the cards in a 3x3 grid, and after studying them, you flip them over so that you can't tell what's where anymore. And then players take turns flipping over one card from the deck, and then they must match either the color or the animal represented on it with one of the 9 cards that's in that face down grid. And if they match correctly, you have a couple of chances to keep going and collect more cards. Otherwise, your turn is over. Similar to the Astute Goose, but definitely a different portion of your brain that works on memory, because there's more spatial sense to it, even though you're keeping track of slightly fewer details.
Interesting. Yeah, that's one that I really would like to try out. I do like that it puts a little bit of a twist on classic memory.
Yeah, well, and it's designed in such a way it's more dynamic than a classic memory game, because the cards that you're trying to remember are always changing. But I think stylistically they hit a great middle ground in that it doesn't look too kiddish. These games were designed actually for older adults to improve or at least retain memory capability, and that shows. But at the same time, they're simple enough and there's no reading or anything that certainly a 5-year-old can play them, and the attention span required is fairly short.
Nice. I like that. And what do you know what the third one is off the top of your head?
The Brilliant Boar. But I don't know anything about how to play it. We haven't opened that one yet.
All right. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. As usual these days, the vast majority of my game playing opportunity came in the form of our public game night that we host now on Monday nights. And I got a chance to play another session of the Trapper Keeper game from Big G Creative.
Was it more fun with more than 2 players?
We played it with 2 players. But,
it's a cute game, though.
They do a really good job with the set collection. And the Trapper Keeper game is essentially a set collection game with a hefty dose of nostalgia.
Yeah, for sure.
If you were a student, a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, into mid-90s,
yeah,
you know what a Trapper Keeper is. Yeah. The game is in a fake Trapper Keeper. It's got so many callbacks to that era with the doodles on the cards. And then the doodles, actually, the Trapper Keeper and the doodles are the 2 big things for me. The rest of it is just school stuff. It's detentions and report cards and homework and stuff like that, like whatever. But also the folders.
Definitely the folders.
Every player gets essentially a mini 5-star mead folder.
Well,
that you've
put Trapper your Keeper stuff was in. Doing those before 5-star was. That's the point. Those kind of folders.
Okay, fine. Fine. Anyway, each player gets a mini one of these things,
yeah.
And that's what they use to store their cards that they're essentially drafting off the shared board.
But the set collection comes into play because you decide which side of the folder to put it in, and so you're only looking at the doodles on one side.
Well, that's the doodle set collection. So.
Oh, fair enough.
There's all sorts of different kinds of set collection that you're balancing over the course of the game.
Enough.
And that's what makes it so good.
Yeah.
Because by the end of the game, honestly, if you're not paying attention, you might be like, well, I hope I won.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at your cards, but, you know, it's really difficult to keep all of it straight. And I really appreciate what they've done with this game, where it makes it way more interesting than some kind of just standard set collection thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it's got enough interwoven stuff to be like a better set collection game than a game like Sushi Go or something like that. Although those are card drafting games, a little bit different.
It's very light, but I like it.
Yeah, it does a great job of what it's trying to do. So that was Trapper Keeper. We also pulled out a game that I haven't played in a long time, which was Concept. And this was really interesting because we played with 4 people, 3 adults, and a 10-year-old.
Okay, we've done that before.
9 or 10-year-old.
Yeah.
He always wanted to choose the hard stuff because he was convinced that he could get people to understand exactly what it was he was talking about.
I'm guessing he couldn't.
No, he couldn't.
Yeah.
He was a crazy person. But one of the neat things about Concept is the way that it kind of revolves around. And so our friend Jill had brought her son. And it's not like she was always on the team with her son, and so consistently felt like she was stuck.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So because the teams always rotated around, everybody kind of shared the load, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, it's less of a handicap.
Right. Yeah. On dealing with those kinds of things. So that was good stuff.
Fair. Well, there's a game you introduced our kids to, and then I got a chance to play a little bit later this week, which is Yum Yum Island.
Isn't it fun?
It's remarkably fun.
It's way more fun than it has any business being.
Well, and honestly, it's a very gimmicky game. I mean, it's a kid's game. It's a game where you put a blindfold on and have to pick stuff up and drop it and hope you got it in the right place. But that said, like, there's actual strategy there. Like, what animal are you going to go for? Does this one give you special powers? Or are you more likely to get it perfectly or at least get some in? And are your teammates allowed to help you this round or not? I mean, it's simple enough for, again, for our five-year-old to understand, but there's still some interesting decisions to make. I love when games do that.
Yeah, they do a really good job with it, just making it interesting enough mm-hmm. that parents can play this game with their kids, but it's still easy enough that kids can play this game with their parents.
Or that kids can play this game with other kids.
Sure.
That's definitely, as our kids have gotten a little older, that's something I look at as a milestone for kid games. I love playing games with our kids, but sometimes they just want to sit down and play games with other kids, and especially if those kids aren't big gamers, there's a huge difference in what games I can play with my kids and what games they can play with their friends. Mm-hmm. Yum Yum Island definitely falls into that, we could totally pull this out and play it with our friends.
Right. It is the kind of game where they can just say, look, this is what you're doing, and talk their friends through it. And even if maybe you have a kid whose friends are late readers or something like that, there's basically no reading in the game. So
yeah, no.
It's all symbology, and there's less than six symbols because some of the die faces are repeated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really easy and very, very approachable and yet not brain numbing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that was fun. That's a good game.
All right. Well, I'll say another game. Asher pulled out a couple of games recently that we really haven't played in a long time, and he pulled out both Batman Flux and Family Flux. So there's a part of these that's kind of the opposite of what we were just talking about. The symbology is clear in Flux, but there's so much reading for a kid who would struggle with it. Mm-hmm. And the rules, since they're constantly changing, are really hard to grasp if your fluid memory is not great.
Yeah, Flux always kind of felt to me like a game that wanted to be a casual game, but it really kind of wasn't. If you didn't have like a gamer mentality, it was really tough to stay on with a game like Flux.
Yeah, I agree. We played a game of Batman Flux, and we had fun with it, and it was good. And then he wanted to play again, but our five-year-old Elliot also really wanted to play. So we pulled out Family Flux, and we talked him through it every time he put a card down.
Sure.
We made it work, but really, that's right at the edge of being doable. So, yeah, I think Flux is a good casual game for people who play a lot of games.
Right. It's a filler game, essentially.
It's silly. You can have a lot of fun with it, especially with all the different themed ones. But it's definitely the kind of game that I don't want to sit down and play over and over again.
Okay, that's
fair. Once is enough.
I mean, I think I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
It takes a special group of people for it to not be, you know, a rough experience.
Yeah.
I did play one more game at the game night. I got a chance to pull out Duple.
Yay!
This is a game that we used to play all the time.
Yeah, back when we only had about a dozen games.
Well, I mean, even after we started to expand
after we had 50 games. We still played it all the time.
We used to play it. It used to be the, all right, well, we played our games for the day.
End of the night game, yep.
Yeah, it's the end of the night. Let's pick something.
It's not midnight yet.
You're right.
Let's play one last game.
Or, it's after midnight. This is going to be awesome. That was the other option.
Also true.
But that game was so well liked at the game night that somebody actually borrowed it. So, it's not currently in the house.
Cool.
But, yeah, it's a great game.
I mean, the whole Duple and Anomia family, I can't recommend them highly enough. They're just great.
And that pretty much does it for the games that I've been playing, except today we got a chance to pull out a game from Strawberry Studios.
Yes, we tried Bon Appetit.
A Bon Appetit, my darling.
It was fun.
Yeah, Bon Appetit is a blind bidding game where you are trying to put together the best meal.
Yeah, so the theme on it was really weird. But I liked it. But the idea that you are bidding for these outrageous dishes to eat with gems is a little out there. But it was good. The value of the gems constantly shifts up and down depending on what the last winning bid was.
I think the theme was whatever. The theme was kind of pasted on. There were some player abilities that you got by winning certain things. But that mechanic of adjusting the value of the money.
That was cool.
It absolutely changed how I played the game.
Because
if I had in my hand multiples of certain gems, I wouldn't want to use those.
You
want
to hang on to those.
You want to hang on to those because if you use them, you're going to drive down the value of the stuff that's in your hand.
Yeah.
And so it is a really interesting way to add some variance to a game that's easy to understand. And one of the things that I like about this is that this is simple arithmetic.
1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Those were your options for values.
It's great for kids, and they really, not only is it, okay, you can practice your rote arithmetic, what is, you know, 4 minus 1 and these things, sure, these kinds of things, but also they can start to understand the dynamic of changing values and how that affects their perception of what things are worth. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think that that is a better way to understand how numbers work.
Mm. Yeah, it's a different way to approach how numbers work. When if I have a yellow jewel and a red jewel in my hand right now, well, right now the yellow jewel is worth 4 and the red jewel is worth 1, but 2 rounds from now, the yellow jewel might be worth 2 and the red jewel, if I still have it, might be worth 3. Oh, well, the yellow one was worth more, now the red one's worth more, without anything changing on my end.
Right.
Just what other people have been doing has changed it. I mean, it was certainly very intuitive for you and me to grasp, but I think our kids did a pretty decent job figuring that out, too, which was
Good. Well, we only played with our oldest.
Sure.
But she definitely understood it almost immediately.
Yeah.
Whether she understood the deep strategy of it, I don't really know.
Sure.
But
I'm not sure I understood the deep strategy of it.
Well, I mean, you knew to hold back. If you had a red and a yellow gem in your hand that were both worth the same amount, and you had another yellow gem in your hand, you knew that the one you wanted to bid with was the red one.
The red one, yeah.
Right, you knew those kinds of things. And I think that learning that ebb and flow,
mm-hmm,
I think will be a really valuable tool for our kids, or anyone's kids, really,
yeah,
in terms of just understanding the dynamics of numbers.
Yeah.
So that's good. We've had, you know, that's Strawberry Studios. So the first game that we got from Strawberry Studios was What's Up, and we loved that game. That game was fantastic.
Well, we got that at the same time as we got Strawberry Ninja.
We did.
Strawberry Ninja's
it's
fine.
Okay. Strawberry Ninja's okay. And then the next game from Strawberry Studios that we had, didn't really love it. We'll have a snap review for that in a couple of weeks. And then this game, which I actually like. I like this one a fair bit. This is, it's nice to have a game that I'm positive about. From that studio, because they do good stuff.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have that.
And there's a nice space for a game that's only a few cards, and once you know all the rules, understand the game, it's only going to take you maybe 10 minutes to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with
there's
that.
There's a nice space for that.
I mean, these are games that once again fall into that whole, why is this game in a box this size kind
of
thing.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating.
The entire game would fit in the bag.
I mean, it's a game with, 12 or 13 cards and a handful of gems.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't need
I think
need
it's 14 cards and the gems, because you have the scoring card.
Right.
The value card, you pull one card out.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's it. 14 cards and a bag of little plastic gems. And the box is like...
The box is your standard, small
7x4x2 inch box or something like that.
I mean, it definitely says this is a small game, but it doesn't say this is a game with a dozen cards.
Right. Anyway, let's move on. Right. So do you have anything else on your list?
One last thing. Our kids played the Exit Box, the Haunted Roller Coaster.
They did, yes.
We specifically set it aside for our two older kids to do, with a little bit of help from the 5-year-old, but not much, and for us to just be on hand for really tough puzzles or for questions. And overall, I think it went really well. I think they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It went a little long, at least as far as their attention spans are concerned.
So, okay. So this is it's an exit box. It was rated 2 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the House of Riddles, which we did before, I think is rated 1 out of 5. I'm not sure.
We'll have to double check.
We'll double
check.
House
of Riddles is an excellent family choice. Haunted Roller Coaster was just a little beyond our kids. Not a lot.
Right.
There were a few moments.
That's exactly it. Haunted Roller Coaster, if we were not there, would not have gone well.
No. No, I agree.
It definitely needed a little bit of breaking the mold of how you normally think, which is something we see a lot in the exit boxes.
The exit boxes happens all the time. Yeah.
And, you know, the kids really struggled with that. I think of even one of the first riddles. I'm obviously not going to give it away or anything, but it was like, okay, well, you think of these things as numbers. What else could they possibly be?
Yeah.
Right. It's evident with both House of Riddles and with the Haunted Roller Coaster that they have removed some of the complexity of the structure of the game by making it more linear.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
And I think it's great. No, I think it's a great thing to do, especially we saw it with the Haunted Roller Coaster. It literally said, do not go farther in this book. Telling the kids essentially everything you need is on this page.
It's right here.
And there have been so many times with the other exit boxes where we're flipping through the book and trying to look at stuff and we don't know what's coming next and we have no idea.
Yeah.
It really does do a good job of leading you, like with breadcrumbs, kind of along the riddle trail, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree. There is a downside to that, though. When we've done other exit boxes with a group of adults, once we get to a certain point, we have several different puzzles we're working on all kind of at the same time, and everybody's kind of pulling something where they feel like maybe they have a better insight.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of moments in the Haunted Roller Coaster where it was everybody else watch while one person tries to work it out. That gets a little frustrating.
Yeah, that did happen a couple of times. I agree. I don't know how you get around that.
Yeah, me either.
It's just something to think
about.
But
it's worth pointing out.
Right. So I guess our commentary on that one would be for parents to say, if this is something that you're doing with your kids, you have to be a lot more deliberate with these more linear exit boxes about incorporating other people and making sure that everyone's taking turns and these kinds of things, which you normally wouldn't have to think about.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right. Well, that's what we've been playing.
All right. Awesome.
Let's do some back talk.
Let's do it. So we got an email from Steve D. He wrote to us to say that he's got a friend who's Swedish, and we were talking about Kallaxes.
Kallaxi?
Kallaxi. Kallaxi is...
Maybe.
Anyway, whatever. We bought some more of those wooden board game holders from...
from IKEA.
From IKEA. And we were wondering on episode 162, what is the plural of Kallax? So, our dear friend Steve checked with his Swedish friend, and she said that Kallax isn't a real word. That was not a surprise.
Shock!
But the plural would probably be, Kallaxer, because galaxy in Swedish is galax, and the plural is galaxer.
All right, so now we know. When you have more than one Kallax, you have Kallaxer.
You have Kallaxer. All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that insight, and we will endeavor to look at our Kallaxer and say the words as close to correctly as we can with fake words.
Sure. I have a little bit more back talk. Joe Cummings, who you may also know as Art of Board Gaming.
I know that guy.
Read our newsletter this week and asked, based on my first line that said, hey, we're finally settling down into a routine again. And he said, well, doesn't it seem like every time you settle into a routine, something pops up again and you have to pound it like a sledgehammer?
Gotta love those kids. I mean,
he's not wrong, but I've definitely found for our family in particular, September and December are the hardest times to keep any kind of routine going.
Well, December's a hot mess, period. Anyway.
I know, but September is hard because not everything starts up again at the same time.
Sure.
And, you know, you're figuring out new bus schedules or new sports schedules, and you're doing all of these things kind of at the same time, except one thing starts one week, and then two more things start the next week, and then three more things start the week after that. And finally, by the end of September, you're like, oh, okay, like, I think I got this now.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I'm just glad that we're getting into that rhythm.
Yes. And one last thing, I'm not going to share specific details, but Ken Franklin, designer of the Mansky Caper.
Love that guy.
Sent us some very kind words about episode 162 and said he hopes he can sit down and play a game with us sometime.
Hopefully at PAX Unplugged.
Anytime, Ken. Anytime.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to that. We're also looking forward to taking a break. So we're going to do that and we're going to come back and we'll talk about some board games that we love to give as gifts.
Our top five.
All right. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. And we're back. So let's talk about some gifts. So here at the Family Gamers HQ, we try to be a little bit, I'll say, wise with our funds and our gift giving. And we try really hard to make sure that we give awesome gifts, which usually means that our kids' friends get board games as gifts. And one of the things that we like to do is, if we know of a sale going on, we'll take a look at the sale.
Take a look.
And if there's any good board games in that sale, we'll pick them up. And we have a box in the closet for future gifts to give to people. Basically, this is the McDonald's model, right? Where they pre-make all the cheeseburgers. Yes. And when the right person, you know, when somebody comes and wants a cheeseburger, they give.
I mean,
we do that with gifts.
To be fair, I also will do this with kids' books that are on sale.
Yep.
Especially if it's a book I already know and love. And the occasional smaller toy, especially if it's the kind of toy that doesn't usually go on sale, like Legos.
Right. Right. Yeah. So there are some other things, but yeah, in the context
But there's a lot of games in there.
Yeah. So we picked some games that really would absolutely fit this category. If we saw these games on sale, we would pick up copies of these games to store in our little box of treasures.
Yes.
To give as a gift at the right opportunity.
And all of these we pick as games that work across a wide range of interests and abilities, for the most part, within whatever category we're looking at.
Right. So the first one on our list, this is a game that is perfect for all ages, has fantastic table presence. In fact, this is a game that I almost always, during our game night, set up closest to the entrance so that people see this game and get drawn in. And that's a game that we've raved about a lot, and that is Drop It from Cosmos.
Yeah, Drop It is a great game for all ages. Non-reading, non-mathy kids can play it with adults. Non-gamers can play it and have fun. Gamers can play it as a filler and have fun.
It's a great spectator
game. Everybody likes this game.
Yes, there's even some rule shifting that you can do with this by giving jokers, which are these little tokens that say you don't have to abide by the
you can still get points this turn. Yeah.
To some of the lesser skilled players, maybe kids or whatever that might be. Maybe you've got an older relative who doesn't have really good
dexterity
with their fingers anymore, you know, whatever it is. So you can even rule shift with a game. Even though this game is super simple, you can still adjust this game for difficulty, and that is fantastic.
I love it.
It's also, we see it on sale on occasion for like $20.
Yeah.
You really cannot beat Drop It from Cosmos.
Also plays equally well whether you have 2 players, 3 players, or 4 players.
Which is bananas.
Which is amazing in such a dexterous kind of game.
Right.
All right. Our next one is the game we would specifically target for adults.
Right.
Or at least teenagers and up.
I would say adults.
Pretty much adults.
I mean, effectively adults.
Yeah. That's got to be something in the Anomia family.
Right.
Anomia, Duple, any of the Anomia expansions. Maybe Anomia After Dark, if you're so inclined.
Not necessarily Family Gamers approved, but if that's the right game for your demographic,
then go for it. Yeah.
So we mentioned Duple as a game that we played at the game night this past week. Anomia is in the same family, done by the same guy. This is a game where everybody's flipping over cards. If your symbol on your card matches the symbol on somebody else's card, it is a race to say
something that fits in the category on the other person's card. So it feels a lot like a speed trivia kind of game, except nobody is going for the same trivia at the same time.
Right. It's clever. It's brilliant. It's a ton of fun. And I really like the fact that you can buy a small box with one deck in it, or you can buy the party pack, which has 6 decks.
Yeah.
You can really expand the number of people that you're playing with. Because you could just shuffle all the decks together. It doesn't matter.
It's totally true.
Right. So that is Anomia from Anomia Press.
All right. On the opposite end of the spectrum.
Complete.
My favorite gift to give to very young children, we're talking 2 and 3 years old, is Go Away Monster. It's such a great introduction to the world of gaming, and most importantly, it's very short.
It's also super non-confrontational.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's a great intro to gaming.
Well, and I mean, you're saying, go away, monster, and your kid can decide if they're, you know, they're throwing the monsters in jail, or if they're putting the monsters into their own cozy little room to be kind to the monsters, just, I don't want you in my room. It's adorable, and almost every time we've played it, it's been several games of it one after another because it's just, it's fun for little kids, and it's not too hard. The main skill it's teaching is taking turns.
Right. Which, you know, I think is really, ultimately at that age, the skill that they need to learn.
Yeah.
And so I think it's perfect for that.
Yeah. So we talked about all ages, we talked about adults, and then we talked about very young children. That still leaves a wide gap. If you want to get a gift for kids, especially for kids to play with other kids, my top recommendation would be Ice Cool or Ice Cool 2, whichever one is easier to find and cheaper.
Or both.
Or both.
If you really want to.
We've reviewed Ice Cool in the past. It's a dexterity game that has a lot of room for skill and improvement and trick shots, but is still fun if you absolutely stink at it.
Oh, I'm terrible. I don't know how people flick those things with accuracy, and then they start doing trick shots with curves, and I don't even know what, I don't know.
Well, and some of it is, it's just fun to think about these little penguins skidding across the ice and trying to escape the hall monitor. You know, and steal fish. It's just silly and fun.
It is kind of an adorable premise.
Yeah.
Right? But it's so hard. I can't do it.
And importantly, for a dexterity game that you're going to let kids play, none of the pieces are terribly small. They're not going to be easy to lose.
Yeah. They could be eaten, though. So you do have to be careful.
They are small enough they could get eaten. But they're not small enough that if it gets flicked on the floor, you're going to miss it.
Right. That is Ice Cool or Ice Cool 2 from Brain Games. That is a great selection to give as a gift.
Okay, one last one.
All right.
Because we said top five, so number five.
Are you
going
to hold strong on the five? Are you really? Are you really going to do it?
Going to try if I can kind of shoehorn two into this last one.
So this is like an idea, not a specific title, but an idea.
Maybe.
Okay, sure.
We were talking about some of these simpler exit boxes, and I would say the Exit House of Riddles is an excellent choice to give as a gift to a whole family for them to play together.
Right.
Especially a family with slightly older children, like 8 and up or 9 and up,
mm-hmm.
and be like, I am giving you an hour and a half of fun for your family. Here you go.
Yeah. And there's so much. I mean, it's not like a game like Smash Up or something like that where you can buy all sorts of expansions. But if you like this, there's a ton more where this came from.
Yeah. And although a lot of the exit boxes are harder than House of Riddles, I would recommend also trying an unlock box, specifically Unlock the Adventures of Oz.
See, I think the Adventures of Oz is actually really hard. Especially if you're not super familiar with the story of The Wizard of Oz.
Maybe it's just because I read The Wizard of Oz a bunch of times growing up, and both of our older kids had read it by the time they were 7.5 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all know the story fairly well, and not just the movie story either. Maybe that's why I feel like it's appropriate for families with kids.
I mean, there are some that are easier in the unlock series, like Squeak and Sausage. I think it's supposed to be one of the easier ones. So there's certainly options there as well.
Yeah.
Right? But no matter what, even though I think we're doing a really good job getting rid of some of the stigma around board games, I think it's still there. And if we're talking about giving a gift to a family that doesn't necessarily have a bunch of board games in their house, this is really a great way to change their perspective on what a tabletop game is.
Yeah, well, I mean, and some people who might groan when you say board game, if you say escape room, they'd be like, maybe I'm interested now.
Right.
So, I mean, well, it's an escape room in a box.
Here's some irony. I think I've probably done, I don't know, a dozen, maybe 15 to 18 of these escape rooms or boxes or whatever. Like, if you put everything that we've done together, some number like that, I've never been to a physical escape room in my life.
Well, that's just because escape rooms became a big thing after we already had multiple children and kind of said, you know what, if we're going to get babysitting, we're going to do something else.
Yeah, like just sit and have quiet dinner. Or, I don't know, go grocery shopping in peace. Whatever it might be. But anyway, the easier escape rooms are really, really great options to buy for a family. They really are just fantastic. But again, the easy ones are for families that aren't used to exit boxes or anything like that. We have a giveaway that has been promised because we hit our latest Pod Pledge funding goal.
Yay!
Hooray! And we are actually going to be giving away an exit game.
But not an easy one.
We have a brand new, because the exit games are destructible, so it'd be kind of a bummer if it wasn't brand new, copy of Exit the Pharaoh's Tomb. This was talked up as a really, really difficult exit box. It's a 4 out of 5 dot exit box.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that much trouble with this. We did this with 4 people. It really, as a 4-dot box, was easier than we expected. That isn't to say that it's easy, and it also probably came right at the peak of our exit box solving
powers,
I guess. This was one you mentioned before about how the game being linear creates a little bit of a problem because you aren't able to distribute tasks. This is probably the one where the task distribution was at its peak.
Yes.
For us.
Yes. It was the least linear.
I remember you guys solved a puzzle while I was working on another puzzle, and I solved my puzzle, and I came back and I was like, okay, what happened? I literally have no idea what's going on right now.
But we did have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, we loved it. It was great. So we do have a copy of The Pharaoh's Tomb, Exit the Game, that we will be giving away. So I don't have any details on this because we're just right now announcing it, but stay tuned to the Family Gamers Facebook page. That is facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA for more information on that giveaway. We'll let it run for a couple of weeks, so it'll probably come up on another podcast or two.
Or take a look at the Family Gamers website, thefamilygamers.com, and the giveaway will be pretty obvious on the front page.
Right at the top. So if all of our talking about exit boxes has interested you, this is definitely something you want to keep an eye out for.
And if not, keep your ears open. There'll be another giveaway soon.
Absolutely.
Well, we already talked a little bit about where you can find us online, but where can you find us on social media?
So I mentioned the Facebook page, facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA. FamilyGamersAA is our social media tag pretty much everywhere. You can go find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
For Andrew and Anitra.
That's right. That's us. Did you know that?
I did.
Okay, just checking. You can always email us, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
And Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you have not already.
Mm-hmm.
If you have subscribed to it, then tell your friends about it.
So they can subscribe to it because it's where all the cool kids are at.
If you've told your friends about it, then leave us a review on Apple Podcast or wherever you subscribe so that people you don't know can find out about it.
If you've left us a review, thanks. We did find out this week some sad news.
Yeah, we've talked about our Pod Pledge for the last year and a half.
And thank you to all of our Pod Pledge supporters. We hugely appreciate it.
Yes. But unfortunately, Pod Pledge, the platform, is going away.
Right. So we have a disused Patreon that I started and then found Pod Pledge and said, this is better, and set everything up on Pod Pledge instead. We will be kicking that Patreon in the butt and getting it moving again. We'll give you more details when we have them.
In the meantime, you can support us by using our Amazon affiliate links.
Yep, absolutely.
Or just talking us up on the social media. Hooray!
Yay, yeah, we really would appreciate that. The affiliate links are a great way to support us without it costing you any extra
money. Doesn't cost you any extra money at all.
All of the games that we talk about on every episode are included in our show notes with Amazon affiliate links. So if we've mentioned something, just head on over to the show notes, give it a click, it'll bring you into Amazon, and we'll get a minuscule kickback.
We'll get 5 cents or something like that. But yeah.
So we would appreciate any support that you are able and willing to give.
Well, Andrew?
Yes, Anitra?
I think that's probably it for this week.
Sounds good to me.
Until next week, play games with your kids.